Thanks to a generous donor, we've purchased a building for the new studios and offices of Issues Etc., Lutheran Public Radio, and The Word of the Lord Endures Forever.
The donor will match up to $200,000 for the purchase and renovation.
The entire cost is approximately $375,000.
You can view an architect's rendering and make a special tax-deductible gift at issuesetc.org
or call 618-223-8385.
Thanks for your consideration.
The Ten Commandments explicitly tell us, honor your father and your mother, and that doesn't change even with their death, even after our parents are dead and our ancestors are long gone.
So the psalmist lets all of this out with any inclination that he would take things into his own hand. This is really key. He trusts in God. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. Okay, it's yours. Take it, God.
It really breathed life back into me as I thought about the reality of God doing something outside of myself, not only in the waters of baptism, but as I commune with him at the Lord's table.
Hello, this is Tyler and
Christina Helfert
in Iowa.
Newlyweds on their honeymoon. Love listening to Issues Etc. while sitting by the fire.
Well, it feels like 2016 all over again, doesn't it? The 2020 elections, like 2016 on steroids. They're still counting. One state says it will be counting for at least another week. And even then, some of these states might be in court before we know who the president of the United States is. How has the media, before, during, and after, been covering these contentious elections? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Thursday afternoon, the 5th of November. We're going to be talking with Terry Mattingly about media coverage of religious voters and the national elections. Then it's part three of our series, Things We See in Church Today. Church symbols from the Cairo to the Agnus Dei to, well, the symbols for the evangelists. There's so many symbols that we see in church. Pastor John Denzer will walk us through some of them. He's director of worship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod a little bit later. Terry Mattingly joins us for media coverage of religious voters and the national elections. Terry is senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Oh, glad to be here.
Why did you select the Groundhog Day clock as the Get Religion graphic for election 2020?
Well, it started off as one thing and turned into another. When I first picked it out, I was just thinking, oh man, here we go again. But by that, I meant, here we go again, another election day. This is going to be angry and people are, you know, that whole sort of thing. I pretty much bought a lot of the predictions going into the race. I can't remember if I mentioned this to you before. Months ago, in the last post-Divine Liturgy lunch that we held at our parish, someone asked me what I thought was going to happen leading up to this election. What did I think was going to happen? And I had three elements of my prediction, which I put on the record at that time, which was I was hoping not to wish ill on Ruth Bader Ginsburg, but I was hoping for Amy Coney Barrett in the Supreme Court. I was expecting a narrow Biden victory, but I thought there was a chance the Republicans could hang on to the Senate, which would prevent, you know, adding states, doing away with the Electoral College, killing the filibuster, packing the court, et cetera, et cetera. So I went into the night thinking, here we go again. As the whole thing unfolded and it became apparent what was going to happen and how incredibly divided the nation still was and how tight this was going to be, Groundhog Day turned into literally Groundhog Day. Building on what you said in the intro, I think you missed one more mathematical component. I think what we're dealing with here is 2016 plus 2000 equals 2020, if you get my political reference. In other words, the throw in the legal battles that are probably going to unfold in courts that kind of resemble the Bush-Gore legal battles except now it's more states. It's not just Florida. And the main thing, and I don't want to talk about politics forever. We need to get to the religion coverage. But I'm fascinated by the fact that I'm not seeing the networks or the major media reading us the actual wording of the state laws in these tightly contested states when it comes to what is proper oversight, which is what the Trump people are alleging. And that's now why we have all these armies of people with American flags standing outside voting places praying and doing a little bit of shouting and whatever. And using a kind of ironic word, the TV stations are starting to call them mobs. They're not acting like some other mobs we've seen lately in American life. But the legal component that if this ends up at the Supreme Court or it ends up in courts leading to the Supreme Court, what people are going to be legally arguing about is whether the states followed their own laws, because state legislatures are in charge of this process. So stop and think about how much have you heard on TV right now of the reporters actually reading you the language of the state laws? I haven't heard a single sentence.
So you say that political beat reporters might have been cued into what was going to happen or what was happening, especially with Trump defying issues of race support among both African-Americans mm-hmm. and Hispanics. Had they been paying attention to the religion beat? What do you mean by that?
Well, and once again, we're talking Florida, Florida, Florida here. But it turned into a bigger story. And in particular, it seems to have been a big story in Texas. You and I have been talking about this for what now? 4 years? That I have a sense that Latino evangelicals, while everybody is talking about Hispanic voters being the surprise factor of the 2020 election, and the big story of the night was Trump doing better with Latinos and to a certain degree African-Americans, but mainly Latinos than before. I would argue that was the big story of the 2016 election, but everybody missed it, which was why did Trump carry Florida? And when they talked about that he got more Latino votes than he was supposed to, and that was the difference in the race, nobody dug into that to find out where he got those extra votes, other than that a lot of them were in the Orlando area somewhere. And that's Latino, Hispanic, that's megachurch, evangelical, Pentecostal, Latino area. They missed the factor then, which is the incredible irony, while everyone's screaming about white evangelicals, which were the story of Trump winning in the primaries and then turning into President Trump in the general election. The white evangelicals, of course, were a big story in that transition. But who put Donald Trump in the White House to become President Trump? And that would have to be Catholic voters in the Midwest, and then specifically Latino evangelicals in the state of Florida. And so now we're talking about Hispanic voters and Latino voters, and the political desks are all writing these stories. The Washington Post wrote two about the Hispanic voters, the big surprise story of the day. And out of those two stories on the same theme, there's one fleeting reference to Hispanic, there's a lot of Christians that are Hispanic and maybe Catholic or maybe evangelical. I don't know if they use the word evangelical or not. I don't remember. But it was like one fleeting reference. When the Trump campaign started their outreach to Latinos in Florida in a Protestant megachurch, their whole operation was geared to reach out to Hispanic pastors and to megachurch Christians in the state of Florida. Now, it's also possible that Texas didn't end up being as narrow as the Democrats hoped because they didn't get as much of the Hispanic vote as they thought. A lot of people were talking about a county right on the border, and it's the most Hispanic county in America. And they were talking about the fact when they were breaking the maps down that Hillary Clinton carried that county by 65%. And Biden won that county by 5%. That's a little bit of a change. Once again, we have this whole thing that the political desk of newspapers can't see the religion factor. And the religion desk, to their credit, the New York Times, I think you and I talked about it, did a fantastic story. I thought it was limited in scope, but it was a very fine story about Hispanic Christians, evangelicals in the state of Arizona. The religion desk is getting this. There's a good piece out today by Religion News Service that connects some of the dots. But the political desk is still clueless, which brings us back to that big Get Religion theme, which is politics is real and religion isn't real. And in this case, they're not even connecting the dots that religion is affecting politics. They're missing the ghost, to put it in Get Religion terms.
Before we get into that Religion News Service piece, and I think also The Atlantic and The Washington Post,
yeah,
national political reporters are talking about the divide in this country in terms, yeah, of the education level, sex, rural versus urban. Why don't they report on the religious divide?
I don't have a clue. It's there in the exit polls. It's there in the analysis. There have been pieces of data put out not only by Ryan Berg. He's a contributor at Get Religion, and he's all over the place right now. And he tweeted out on election night, it seems Hispanics, especially Hispanic evangelicals, are going to be the story tonight. They are a fascinating group, very conservative on social issues, abortion, gay marriage, and on fiscal policy, but much more moderate on evangelical. I would even note that on fiscal policy, they're more like Main Street, small business, entrepreneur people, as opposed to like, hey, three cheers for big tech and Amazon, you know, the new modern Democratic Party economic world. I honestly don't know. There's been enough sirens go off, even in some of their own newspapers. I think they're just in denial. And then you can go back to the fact that all the way post Roe v. Wade, but certainly during the Bill Clinton era, when we transitioned then over to George Bush era, certainly some of the pollsters were even beginning to say, if you're going to divide these two Americas up, the questions you need to ask are about religion, moral, and social issues. Those are the questions that are the most divisive. Those are the cases at the Supreme Court that caused the most heat. As I've mentioned many times, even when we argued about health care and Obamacare, the last piece of the puzzle to fall in place was abortion and forcing a collection, I believe it was 8 or 9 pro-life Democrats in the upper Midwest to vote for Obamacare to get it over the line. And then, like almost all those guys, lost in their next time they were up for election, which to some degree, Obama was willing to lose the House of Representatives over the fact that he wanted and his people wanted Obamacare without conscience clauses on subjects like abortion and other things. Now we have the Equality Act, which raises the conscience battle over to transsexual surgeries, whether doctors can refuse to provide care based on their religious beliefs. And we had that question where Biden in one of the forums was asked about trans thing, and he said he was perfectly comfortable with starting transition for transsexual children as young as 8 or 9. I mean, that's a hot button issue between half of America versus the other half of America. And the Groundhog Day graphic now is, after all of what's happened, David French has done some wonderful analysis on this. After all of this has happened in the last 4 years, all of the tweets, all of the warfare, depression, a COVID crisis, all the stuff that's come with the Trump era, what we saw so far is that all of that affected maybe a combined total of about 500,000 voters in about 5 swing states at the most. when you look at the margins, that it looks like Biden may win in some of the crucial states or lose in some of the crucial states. It could make it, it could all end up adding up to being only 100,000 voters. That's how dug in America is right now in terms of the divisions. And all those other divisions, urban versus rural, absolutely true. But is there no religious component to urban versus rural? They love to quote the higher education versus high school graduates, and that is about half the equation, but there's tons and tons and tons of Catholics and evangelicals and Latter-day Saints and all kinds of people who don't fit that divide at all. All of those factors are true, but you just simply can't get away from the fact that if you want to predict how someone votes in a national election, other than the factor of race, you ask them moral and religious questions. And that's how you find out who goes one direction and who goes the other. Amazing that they still, they're avoiding this.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of religious voters and the national elections. When we come back, the media's dependence on polling. Thanks to a generous donor, we've purchased a building for the new studios and offices of Issues Etc., Lutheran Public Radio, and The Word of the Lord Endures Forever.
The donor will match up to $200,000 for the purchase and renovation.
The entire cost is approximately $375,000.
You can view an architect's rendering and make a special tax-deductible gift at issuesetc.org
or call 618-223-8385.
Thanks for your consideration.
Is your school or homeschool ready to take the next step in teaching students with learning challenges? We can help. The Simply Classical curriculum, voted number one for special learners, is available from Memoria Press for students with autism, learning disabilities, or Down syndrome. We provide everything you need for a full year. Use promo code LPR21 at simplyclassical.com. Simplyclassical.com.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
For your next family vacation, consider Our Beach House, a charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.
This is Jeff Schwarz, General Manager of Lutheran Public Radio, with a message for listeners in the Mountain and Pacific time zones. We pledge to have Issues Etc. podcasts posted daily, no later than 5 p.m. Mountain, 4 p.m. Pacific. This will allow you to download and listen to the latest Issues Etc. podcast weekdays during your evening commute. Again, if you live in the Mountain or Pacific time zone, download Issues Etc. before you leave work and listen during your drive home.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Terry Mattingly, founder and editor of Get Religion, about media coverage of religious voters and the national elections. So, Terry, in light of what you mentioned before about Latino evangelicals, we recently spoke with Mark Hemingway of Real Clear Investigations. He said that the media need to stop their dependence on polling. What do you think?
Well, I think, yes, first of all, I'll affirm what he's saying. Yes, they need to lessen or avoid being addicted to polls. There are actually some good smaller polling companies working in individual regions that do some amazing work. But you, at some point, you have to stop and ask, why are the polls so inaccurate? And to some degree, that's because the polls are being written from people in blue zip codes, and they're reading them to people in red zip codes. And surprisingly, there's a language disconnect. Unsurprisingly, There's a language disconnect. But we also need, and this gets us into the big theme we heard so much about the other night, secret Trump voters. I think that's real, but Rod Dreher has come up with a term out of religious studies. I think he could be onto something here. And the term is Ketman, K-E-T-M-A-N, and it's a term from the study of Islam. And Ketman is a term given to Muslims who publicly affirm everything about Islam, but privately don't live the faith out at all. In other words, they have an incentive to be honest about their beliefs. And Rod thinks we've reached a stage where many Americans have decided that they have to practice some sort of metaphysical Ketman strategy at work, in their universities, in grad schools, in major corporations, that they no longer can tell people what they actually believe, and that they have to either be silent or they have to pretend to be one way or the other. And when in their hearts, they know how they're going to vote. They know what they actually believe. And I think that this is a major factor with the polls, especially when you get out into the heartland of America, out into the red zip codes, into the other half of America, the wrong half of America, as far as our mainstream media and others and entertainment industries, et cetera, are convinced that there seems to be a good America and a bad America. We heard a lot of that a couple of nights ago. And one of the key factors there is, are the people in the red zip codes being honest with the pollsters? And I think Rod is onto something here about why, and it's bigger than Trump. It's not just saying, well, I intend to vote for President Trump again and fearing that that will hurt them. They're not being honest about what they believe about family. They're not being honest with what they believe about diversity in their industries. They're scared to talk about their real beliefs because they believe it could come back to hurt them in their classrooms, in their jobs, in some cases in their families. That's how divided America is right now. And the Groundhog Day numbers fell over to 6 again, and we had another one of those days that made this undeniable. But the press, once again, can't seem to accept that religion's a part of that.
What did you find in that religion news service story that you mentioned before?
Well, that was just an example of connecting the obvious. They talked to actual, what a concept. They talked to crucial Hispanic megachurch pastors who were involved in the get out the vote efforts for Trump. Now, doesn't that seem like a fairly logical group of people to call up? I mean, if you were thinking about why Hispanic turnout was better for Trump than anybody thought it would be, that's such an obvious journalism situation that you wonder why the minute this, well, I know COVID, I guess, to some degree affects this, but the minute this theme emerged in Florida, why weren't there correspondents calling up the Hispanic pastors who ran the Trump outreach in Florida? Their names are on a website. They were involved in public events. There were photographs of them. One of them prayed at the Democratic National Convention. Why not talk to these people? So the Religion News Service thing, just to me, was an example of the religion beat professionals getting the basic facts. Maybe 4 years late, but still getting the basic facts. Whereas the political desks still seem to have their blinders on.
You also wanted to highlight something you saw in The Atlantic.
Well, that's the same situation. And we saw this in a couple of other essays on op-ed pages, to where people whose life breath is politics are still analyzing this division in America. America is so divided. It's red America and blue America. And yes, we all know that. And they're still managing to write about this. Yet you search the article for church, nothing. You search the article for evangelical, nothing. You search the article for prayer, nothing. You search the article for religious liberty, nothing. Remember in 2:16 when we heard all of this repentance by some people, including even the editors of the New York Times? We missed half of America. We're so sorry. It won't happen again. Gosh, we'll be better. We'll go out. We'll listen to average Americans, and we'll try to understand their lives, and we'll do better. We promise we will. And then the Groundhog Day numbers fall over again, and it's the same thing. But once again, we need to praise, with exception of a lot of religion writers. If we would, on election night, if major newspapers and channels, television channels and whatever, if the major newsrooms would allow their religion beat specialist, first of all, it would help to hire one. If they would at least allow their religion beat specialist to be a part of the analysis and help with some of the decisions on story coverage, we wouldn't have this massive blind spot, to name the book that some of us wrote a number of years ago, Blind Spot, When the Press Doesn't Get Religion. Groundhog Day.
What did you find recently in the Washington Post that sparked your interest?
Yeah, that's the exact same syndrome in those two pieces. Political desk blindness. This has to be explained purely in economic terms. We've got to explain it in purely in educational terms or racial terms. We've got to find a way to do that. Except now we're writing about the fact that one of the racial stereotypes seems to be breaking down to some degree. So why are some Hispanics so loyal to the Democratic Party, and why are some of them now emerging as so willing to even consider Donald Trump, someone whose language about Hispanics and Latinos, whatever you think of the man, he has said a lot of things that were highly, highly offensive to Hispanics and Latinos. But he made up ground there. And he made up ground largely through moral and social issues, as well as this kind of emphasis on small business, help the economy, entrepreneur thing. So the Atlantic and those two Washington Post pieces were all just signals from the same echo chamber.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We're talking about media coverage of religious voters and the national elections. We will discuss former Obama administration Michael Ware right after this.
The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th century. The 11th century. The 8th century. The 4th century. The best of the Church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Our Christian faith is under constant attack, and we must be proactive in keeping our children in the church. At Faith Lutheran School in Plano, Texas, we believe that an education rooted in God's Word is one that stands against the very gates of hell. Nothing in this world is more important. Offering a rigorous classical Lutheran education, we provide in-person and live online remote learning opportunities for preschool through grade 12. To learn more, visit flsplano.org, flsplano.org.
Hi, I'm Pastor Palmer from Catalina Lutheran Church in sunny Tucson, Arizona. We're a confessional, liturgical, hymn-singing, Bible-teaching, gospel-preaching congregation, and we would love to share God's good gifts of word and sacrament with you. Look us up online at catalinalutheran.org or give us a call at 520-825-9255. God be with you.
Solid. Serious. Substantive.
You're listening to Issues Etc.
You may be one of those pastors who need to be refreshed and refueled because of your parish ministry.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Dr. Charles Geeshan.
Concordia Theological Seminary has a wonderful program, not only in continuing education during the summer, but in an advanced study program called the Doctor of Ministry. And it's a very practical program because it focuses on congregational ministry. It incorporates biblical theology with the ministry of the congregation. It's also very accessible for pastors, and it's also affordable. You can major in pastoral care and leadership, teaching and preaching, or mission and culture. And we pray that pastors will take advantage of this program.
Learn more about the Doctorate of Ministry program at ctsfw.edu or by calling 1-800-481-2155, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is our guest, founder and editor of Get Religion. We're talking about media coverage of religious voters and the national elections. So, Terry, why do you urge your listeners and your readers there at Get Religion to pay attention to one Michael Ware?
Oh, interesting. He's a fascinating guy. He's one of the people you need to follow on Twitter. Conservatives certainly will not agree with him all the time. But here's the key. Liberals are not going to agree with him all the time either. And he was in the Barack Obama White House team. He was one of the people who was in charge of their outreach to evangelicals and to other traditional forms of Christianity. And he's beginning to note that Biden didn't improve his numbers that much with evangelicals, but in some states, there was a group called Not Our Faith, which was kind of a progressive evangelical alliance. Here's one of Michael Ware's tweets. In Michigan, where Not Our Faith was active, Biden is winning 31% of white evangelicals, according to the Emerson exit poll. AP Votecast had Biden at 22% among white evangelicals. Clinton won 14% of white evangelicals. Well, in a race as narrow as Michigan, going from 14 to 31% of white evangelicals would be rather significant, wouldn't it? And the other places where this, I think the exits are really going to show us, this is going to be the story, I believe, in Georgia. Why is Georgia so tight, especially in the suburbs of Atlanta and in the Atlanta area? I think we're going to find that it's going to turn out that there was a swing vote of evangelicals to Biden that probably cost President Trump something like 100,000 to 200,000 votes. And how tight is that race and how much will that matter? So now then the question is, other than issues of Trump personality, what caused them to switch? I think one of the most fascinating voices that people could look to right now, I wish I could quote the website to you, but I watched a fascinating interview recently, just a day or so ago, with former Senator Rick Santorum, who is a conservative Roman Catholic. Of course, he was in the U.S. Senate. In the U.S. Senate, he was known as a staunch pro-lifer, staunch moral conservative, and he was absolutely hated by the religious left. But he was also someone who, with Joe Lieberman, wrote compromise bill after bill after bill on care for the poor, children aid. I think he was a key player in the AIDS bill for aid to Africa on AIDS research. He was a part of these compromises based on his Catholic faith. I'm talking to you about him now because he's also a CNN contributor, which meant on election night he was sitting in the CNN newsrooms and seeing the exit polls. And he stressed that he couldn't deal with the specifics of a lot of the exit polls, but he noted that there was evidence that even in the exit polls, people lied about who they voted for, which is just bad. There was like a 10% gap, a Kettman factor, if we want to use Rod's term. But then the other thing he said that was fascinating, and he gave Donald Trump a lot of credit for things he had done in terms of his policies, but he noted that CNN was sitting on exit poll data that indicated that 84% of the people who voted for Donald Trump, and he might have said white evangelicals who voted for Trump, but 84% of this particular study group stressed that they voted for Donald Trump because of his policies, not his personality. Not how he handled the office, but what he actually accomplished. So Santorum said, the issue now is can Republicans find a way to stay open to racial minorities, to stay open to small business, to stay open to all of these areas that could emerge as their strength, including Latinos to some degree. Can they manage to stay open with those people separated from the personal conflicts and arguments and issues about Donald Trump? I think that's a fascinating question, and it's something that you're watching a lot of Republicans, including people who endorsed Donald Trump as well as people who opposed him among cultural conservatives. They're beginning to say, how do we consolidate that? I thought of it. I think the name of the county in Texas is Starr County, S-T-A-R-R. I might be wrong on that, but that county where Hillary Clinton won by 65% and Trump only lost by 5%. Biden won by 5% in that county. Think of it this way. If the presidential candidate 4 years from now is Mario Rubio and the vice presidential candidate is Tim Scott of South Carolina, do you think that ticket might in any way build on the results we're seeing among Latinos and African Americans this time around, especially if the next 4 years turn out to be quite chaotic? So Michael Weir is someone to follow. He also had an excellent tweet the other day that noted that the exit poll question on abortion in Ohio was stated simply as, which comes closest to your position? Abortion should be legal or illegal? And he said this is an incredibly unhelpful wording to the question because this is exactly how Democrats have been approaching this issue in recent elections, and it's been a disaster for them to focus on it as strictly legal versus illegal. He said at some point you have to start asking people some questions in the middle of that on First Amendment issues, abortion issues, and whatever. I tweeted back at Michael about that and said it's also not at all the issues that are currently before the court. I think there's an outside possibility of Roe v. Wade going down, but I think it's much more likely that you're going to see the court grant states the ability to make restrictions on abortion in a lot of ways that are legal or could be legal under Roe versus Wade if the court allowed them. So Michael Weir is someone that I think someone should be following if they want to look for a bridge builder among Democrats. And as always, there are people I think you should be following, like Rick Santorum, like David French, Karen Swallow Pryor, and a bunch of other people that you should be looking for among bridge builders, among cultural and moral conservatives.
With about a minute here, Terry, why do you suggest that in post-election analysis, journalists dig into suburban white evangelical women?
Because I think even though Trump did pretty well with married women as a subgroup in America, enough to make the left furious about it, and Biden's leading group was single women, and Trump was popular with married women, I still think that, especially in Georgia, if you dug in there, I think you would find that a specific outreach by Democrats to evangelical women based on Trump, just hitting them over and over with the style of Trump and how he acted and what he said and the personality issue as your spear point, I predict you would find quite a few evangelical women who might have swung to Biden just based on the issue of Trump's personality. So that was my hint there. Clearly, that Democratic Party outreach to evangelicals had some result. And even if it only switched 10% of the votes, if we find out that Trump got 75% of the white evangelical vote instead of 81%. Look at that over a national level. How many voters is that, with white evangelicals remaining the single largest organized religion group, political niche in American politics?
Terry Mattingly is senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you very much.
Glad to be here.
When we come back, part three of our series, Things We See in Church. Today we'll be talking about all those many symbols that you see, the letters that appear on crucifixes and other parts of the church. They can be confusing. We'll explain all of them with Pastor Sean Denzer right after this. Explore and remember several facets of God's forgiveness with the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November, Flowing from the Cross. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or learn more about Flowing from the Cross at issuesetc.org. Flowing from the Cross, Six Facets of God's Forgiveness. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November, 1-800-325-3040 or issuesetc.org.
In many ways, St. Matthew Lutheran Church in Bel Air, Maryland is just like any other Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod Church. They have worship services each Sunday and reach out to their community, but one thing they don't do is pay their electric bill. Hello, this is Rahema Kavuga, Synod Relations Manager of Lutheran Church Extension Fund. And if you want to hear what St. Matthew actually did to eliminate their electric bill, just visit interesttime.org. That's interesttime.org.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Deaconesses are women trained to share the gospel of Jesus Christ through works of mercy, spiritual care, and teaching of the Christian faith. The word deaconess means servant. Find out more on how you can serve in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod through the vocation of deaconess at lcms.org/deaconess. Working in faith, laboring in love, remaining steadfast in the hope of our Lord Jesus Christ. LCMS Deaconess Ministry, lcms.org/deaconess.
Do you know any military veterans in your church or community? Do you have a passion to support and reach them with the gospel of Jesus Christ? Then Operation Barnabas is for you. Called by Christ's love, Operation Barnabas engages, empowers, and equips LCMS faith communities to provide hope, healing, and support to military-connected persons living in their community. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces.